Hey, I'm Dr. Michael Hunter, forensic pathologist from Autopsy, Reels Channel's medical mystery series on Podcast One and Apple Podcasts. Be sure to download the Podcast One app and subscribe. Then go to Reels.com, that's R-E-E-L-Z.com, to find more programs like this one on Reels Channel.
I know Carrie would be landing in about 30 minutes.
United Airlines, it's a medical emergency.
And I got a phone call. They said they couldn't wake Carrie up.
Now to breaking news about actress Carrie Fisher. She's hospitalized tonight after suffering a serious heart attack.
And we thought, she's going to survive this.
Actress Carrie Fisher died on December 27, 2016, 4 days after losing consciousness on a transatlantic flight. She was the daughter of Hollywood royalty, best known for playing Princess Leia in the Star Wars films.
Carrie brought that signature wit and humor to the roles that she played.
How could you typecast me with my weird background except as a space princess with a gun and a weird hairstyle?
But she had a dark side, which she faced in film and in reality.
Then I said, Carrie, you let me down. You told me you wasn't going to do this anymore.
Carrie Fisher wrote a series of best-selling books about her battles with addiction, but was thought to be drug-free before she died.
She was at the height of her career again. I just knew that she was surrounded by wrong people. Period.
It's generally assumed that Carrie Fisher died from a heart attack, but I'm not convinced. Her medical report states that she died from undetermined factors, which is unusually inconclusive, considering she was in the hospital for 4 days before she passed away. I want to know what really caused Carrie Fisher's death at the relatively young age of 60.
World-renowned medical examiner and forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter has performed over 5,000 autopsies, collaborating closely with law enforcement and other forensic specialists. His pivotal role in investigating suspicious cases has revealed the truth behind mysterious deaths for over 20 years.
This is Carrie Fisher's final medical report. A full autopsy was not conducted, but samples were taken when she arrived at the hospital and 4 days later when she died. I'm going to use the analysis of these samples along with all available medical records to try and discover what caused Carrie Fisher's sudden death.
May 2016, Pinewood Studios, Buckinghamshire, England. 7 months before Carrie Fisher's death. Carrie is getting ready for her performance as Princess Leia in the latest Star Wars film, The Last Jedi. It's been over 40 years since she first played the role, and she's had a turbulent time over this period. She's accompanied by her French bulldog, Gary. He's a constant companion, despite her busy schedule.
Amber Carlins, biographer.
Carrie's career was on a tremendous upswing. They had just released the new Star Wars movie. They had two more in the pipeline. She had just written a new book that detailed her affair with Harrison Ford. So it was really a time when her career was booming.
Looking at footage of Carrie just before she died, she appears fit and healthy. So there were no obvious physical signs that might suggest there was anything wrong.
Carrie Frances Fisher was born on October 21st, 1956 in Burbank, California, into an A-list Hollywood family. Her mother was the celebrated actress Debbie Reynolds, and her father was the singer Eddie Fisher.
Ruta Lee, friend.
Debbie fell very, very much in love. Eddie Fisher was the hottest star that there was. He was darling, he was charming, he was everything except a good father.
The marriage was short-lived.
Eddie Fisher ran off with his wife's best friend, the movie icon Elizabeth Taylor, when Carrie was just 18 months old.
He rarely saw Carrie. He would forget birthdays and Christmas. Debbie would sign cards from Daddy, you know, with toys and things for the holidays.
Eddie Fisher!
As Carrie grew up, she got to see her absent father and busy mother only rarely.
Carrie had big stars as parents, which meant being on the road. With Eddie, he was just away, period. But Debbie, she was home as much as she could be.
And in a lot of ways, that's how Carrie got started in performing, because she wanted an opportunity to spend more time with her mother. When she was 15, I believe, she made her debut in a Broadway show, again, to spend more time with her mother. So it was almost a method of survival.
I grew up in an environment that was very surreal, but that was sort of my reality. I don't know, it sort of makes you grow up fast.
At 17, Carrie Fisher went to drama school and made her debut at age 18 in the film Shampoo. A year later, she was offered the role of Princess Leia in the first Star Wars film.
She thought it was the silliest thing she was ever going to do in her life. Little did she realize that she would go down forever as Princess Leia.
Here they come.
It was not a second childhood for me, it was my first. You know, here I am shooting guns and swinging across giant caverns.
Star Wars was a runaway success, earning $775 million and surpassing Jaws to become the highest-grossing film of all time. It made Carrie Fisher into a new kind of female star.
Leia was revolutionary. To have a woman who was deep into the action, to have a woman who could be sarcastic, and a woman who could stand up and fight for herself.
As well as Star Wars, Carrie Fisher went on to appear in almost 40 films and wrote more than a dozen best-selling books. In 1983, she married the singer Paul Simon, but divorced a year later. And in 1992, she had a daughter, Billy, with Hollywood agent Brian Lord.
Gloria Creighton, Carrie's caregiver.
So she just loved her Billy. She did everything to make Billy happy.
From Carrie Fisher's medical report, I can see that at the time of death, she weighed 171 pounds and was 5'1" tall. But looking at photos from a year earlier, she has clearly put on a lot of weight in the months before she died. Sudden weight loss and gain, known as a yo-yo dieting, can cause serious health problems. So I want to investigate if it played a role in impacting Carrie Fisher's health.
Carrie went on a diet every 20 minutes. She would have a drink of wine and go, "Oh, Lord, I have to lose weight."
Carrie's fluctuating weight may have had a lot to do with her unusual diet.
I've been fighting with her since the day I met her in 1992. Drink water! She hated water. She drank at least a dozen Cokes a day, and she ate peanut butter and vanilla ice cream.
When Carrie Fisher first played Princess Leia, she was asked to lose 10 pounds in weight for the role. When she returned to the role in 2015, she was again asked to lose weight, this time 35 pounds.
Dr. Linda Papadopoulos, psychologist.
Carrie struggled through her life with her weight and also with her body image. I mean, she was the pinnacle, right, of male desire in that famous gold bikini. And so I think it would be easy to think that that was a woman who certainly would look in the mirror and feel wonderful. But Carrie struggled with body dysmorphia. She hated looking at herself.
Body dysmorphia is an inability to see yourself the way that you are. So you fixate on a certain part of your body or your face, and you think it looks awful. It has no basis in reality, the way that you look. Rather, it's about how you think you look, how you appear to others. And it's that pathological thinking that makes it a mental health issue.
Carrie Fisher's body dysmorphia led to her yo-yo diet from an early age, which could be very damaging to her health. Extreme calorie reduction increases the stress hormone cortisol, which can have multiple negative health effects, including heart disease, cancer, and diabetes. Yo-yo dieting can also cause an increase in cholesterol, which increases the risk of atherosclerotic heart disease, where arteries become blocked by fatty deposits. Studies have shown that women who yo-yo diet are 3.5 times more likely to suffer sudden cardiac death than women with stable weights. As Carrie's autopsy does show signs of atherosclerotic heart disease, I can't rule out a compromised heart, but I'm still not convinced this is the main cause of her death. However, I can see the presence of a number of prescription drugs, such as Prozac, in her toxicology report. Carrie was known to suffer from mental illness, so I want to investigate what role these drugs and mental illness may have played in her death.
Actress Carrie Fisher died after losing consciousness on a transatlantic flight.
The iconic star passed away days after suffering a massive heart attack.
Now, one of America's top forensic pathologists, Dr. Michael Hunter, is examining all the available evidence to assess what really caused Carrie Fisher's death.
In the coroner's investigative report, I noticed that Carrie had been prescribed Abilify and Lamictal. These are strong antipsychotic and anticonvulsive drugs normally prescribed to people with mental health problems. So I want to investigate if these drugs or Carrie's mental condition could have any bearing on her death.
When she was 14, 15 years old, she was already showing signs of mental problems. Nobody at that time diagnosed it. Nobody understood about that.
June 10th, 1980. Psychiatrist Dr. Barry Stone's office, Los Angeles. Following continued worries over Carrie's mental state, she visits Dr. Stone. She's 24, but has been affected by mental illness for many years. Dr. Stone diagnoses that Carrie is a manic depressive, a mental illness now called bipolar disorder.
Bipolar disorder is a mood disorder, and it's characterized by this kind of polarized way of feeling, that you either feel on top of the world and full of energy and just almost agitated with it, so to the point that you can't control your thoughts and they fly around and you don't want to sleep, to completely the other way, where you feel very depressed and low and lethargic, so there's never kind of a happy balance.
Carrie gave names to her mood swings. She called her manic phase Roy, and her depressive one she called Pam.
Perfect example of a Roy moment is when Moulin Rouge opened. We ended up staying and watching it twice straight through and then going to get a tattoo. Roy needed to get action and go and do and be, and Pam needed to just kind of sit and feel sorry and sob and stay quiet.
The drugs Carrie was taking would reduce these mood swings, but their full effectiveness would only become apparent when she stopped taking them.
When she wasn't on the proper medication, she would go absolutely wild and crazy because she was wacko if she wasn't on her meds.
1997, Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, Los Angeles. Carrie stopped taking her bipolar medication after a bad reaction. She didn't sleep for 6 days,
oh, God,
prompting a psychotic episode that resulted in her being committed to the psychiatric ward at the hospital.
Okay. It was pretty bad.
Did you come to get me?
She kind of lost her mind.
From the stone steps where Gianni Versace was shot to death, the FBI is confirming the .40 caliber pistol used to kill designer Gianni Versace.
She became convinced that she was a serial killer who was being manhunted.
Have you seen that?
Killer is on the loose.
They're going to take me.
It got so severe that the doctors actually told her brother that she may never really come back to them.
FBI hope the murderer won't get far.
How can that happen? This idea. It's all my fault.
Yeah, I was up there with her at Cedars. It was sad because she was a different person. You know, it wasn't the care that I knew. Her mind was bad.
Carrie recovered, but after decades of battling her bipolar disorder, she decided to try an unorthodox method to overcome her condition once and for all. Carrie decided to undergo electroconvulsive therapy, also known as ECT, or shock therapy.
It was a big decision for Carrie to do the ECT. She had gone to a point where she was Pam for a little too long, and she would say she felt like her brain was like concrete, and she needed to jackhammer her brain.
Electroconvulsive therapy changes the pattern of blood flow and alters the metabolism of areas of the brain which may be affected by depression. The electric shock seems to reset serotonin levels, a neurotransmitter involved in mood and arousal. Despite not being FDA approved, studies have shown that patients who have undergone ECT believe it has had a positive effect on their condition.
She definitely benefited from ECT. It would knock her out for a couple of days. She would just be very kind of sleepy and whatnot. That was a balancer. I guess that worked when medication wouldn't.
I don't think the large number of strong bipolar drugs Carrie was prescribed were responsible for her death, as they are not identified or found at high enough levels in her toxicology analysis. However, people with bipolar disorder are twice as likely to suffer from cardiovascular problems as those without. The reason for this is that bipolar disorder is more often than not related to obsessive and addictive behaviors.
The interesting thing about the hyperphase of bipolar disorder is that you have no impulse control. So if you eat obsessively. If you spend obsessively. If you party like, you know, you don't sleep and you take the drugs and the alcohol, so there's no kind of self-regulation.
For me, it's about various obsessions. I mean, there's drug obsession, self-obsession, man obsession, career obsession, self-obsession, self-obsession, self-obsession.
Looking at Carrie's toxicology report, I can see that her obsessions clearly included a number of illegal drugs, including cocaine and ecstasy. So I want to investigate what role these may have played in her death.
World-renowned forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter is investigating the death of actress and writer Carrie Fisher. So far, he's discounted her bipolar medication and yo-yo dieting as being responsible, but has now found another potential cause.
I can see from her toxicology report that traces of cocaine metabolite, benzoylecanine, morphine, and ecstasy were found in her system. So I want to investigate what impact these drugs may have played in her death.
December 11th, 2016, Waterstones Bookstore, London, 16 days before her death. Carrie is signing copies of her latest book, The Princess Diarist. It's the latest in a long line of best-selling books that have revealed her battles with mental illness and addiction.
The fact that she revealed as much as she did, that's an artist. She has the license to express it the way she wants, when she wants.
Carrie Fisher's first book was published in her early 30s and was based on her own experience of drug addiction. And I found something in Carrie's past which might help explain her attitude towards drugs.
In 1969, when Carrie was just 13 years old, her mother found a bag of marijuana that had been left after a party.
It's marijuana.
And suggested they both try it together.
This business of marijuana was very, very much like most parents saying to their children, if you're going to drink, drink at home. Let's do it together so you'll know what it is and don't experiment out on the streets.
Whatever, Mom.
Some weeks later, Carrie remembered the bag of marijuana and found an escape from her unhappy childhood.
When you are suffering, I think you find solace where you can. Carrie had a very friendly relationship with drugs, and they were a comfort.
Carrie's father, Eddie Fisher, was an alcoholic and a drug user. And Carrie's mother, Debbie, was also known to enjoy a drink.
Carrie's father definitely had a large influence on her taking drugs. He was a drug addict. He was addicted to methamphetamines for 37 years. He would take drugs in front of them when they were children. And Carrie actually started referring to him as Puff Daddy because he would smoke 5 joints a day.
What she saw was someone that she idolized, and she saw that he was doing drugs. So if my parents are doing it, you know, these are the people I love the most, that love me the most, that care about me the most, then surely it must be okay.
Looking at Carrie Fisher's autopsy, I have discovered that she had a perforated septum where the cartilage dividing the nostrils is disintegrated. And it's notoriously caused by excessive use of cocaine.
March 1979, Finse, Norway. Carrie is in her dressing room getting ready to shoot the ice planet scenes for the next installment in the Star Wars franchise, The Empire Strikes Back.
I respect you. You're a bold fighter.
When Carrie was in her 20s, she had a pretty unfortunate trip with some really brutally strong weed with Harrison Ford and decided that was it, no more weed for her.
Carrie moved on to stronger drugs, which, by her own accounts, she took to like a duck to water.
I took cocaine. I took hallucinogenics. I took pretty much the gamut.
By the time she was 28, she was a self-confessed drug addict, leading to the end of her marriage to singer Paul Simon after just 1 year. By this time, Carrie was taking a wide range of substances.
If I did it, I didn't do it consistently. I did it eventually. Prescription drugs were my preference.
In Carrie's toxicology report, I can also see the presence of a lot of opiate-based drugs, including morphine and methadone. Mood-altering drugs are often used by bipolar sufferers to self-treat the condition. Opiate-based drugs attach to the body's many opioid receptors, which are the reward and pleasure systems of the brain. When opioids are taken, this reward system feels an extreme rush because of the increase in dopamine, which is an important neurotransmitter. Dopamine signals the neurons in your body in a way that creates a very high level of pleasure and excitement, often referred to as a high.
It was this euphoric feeling that Carrie Fisher sought to dispel her depression.
She said she took opiates to feel better. When you're frantic and distressed about why you're behaving a certain way and why are people staring at you, I would presume that any of those opiates help.
But for Carrie, her self-medicating was one problem compounding another. In the spring of 1985, Carrie Fisher, at the age of 28, overdoses on prescription painkillers and alcohol and has her stomach pumped. It prompts her to seek help for the first time.
You just tell yourself that you are different. I was in an emergency room. That's a strong indicator that your life isn't working.
She told me, Gloria, I'm clinging. I'm not doing it no more. I say, Kara, I am so proud of you. That make me feel so good.
The relationship Carrie had with drugs was something that would come and go. And as many addicts experience, they have lows when they're not doing it, and then they go off the wagon.
I do start the book out. Maybe I shouldn't have given the guy who pumped my stomach my phone number, but what the hell, he'll probably never call me anyway.
Carrie was thought to have been clean in the months prior to her death, but her medical report suggests otherwise.
From the toxicology results, it's not possible to ascertain exactly how many drugs Carrie took or when she took them. But I can see the presence of benzoylecanine, which cocaine breaks down into. This suggests that exposure took place within 72 hours before she collapsed. But her presentation on the plane does not suggest the use of a stimulant. Therefore, I'm going to discount cocaine. But the medical report cites a condition called sleep apnea as a potential cause of Carrie Fisher's death. So I want to see if this was actually the case. Sleep apnea is a disorder that occurs when a person's breathing is interrupted during sleep and can be worsened by excessive drug use. It happens when the muscles and soft tissues in the throat relax and collapse sufficiently to cause a blockage of the airway. It can also be caused by the brain forgetting to tell the body to breathe. People with untreated sleep apnea stop breathing repeatedly during their sleep, starving the brain and the rest of the body of oxygen. One consequence of sleep apnea is a change in the voice. And I've noticed that Carrie Fisher's voice changed dramatically towards the end of the 1990s.
My life is very weird. And I wait for it the weird to build up, and then I can get a new show out of it.
There certainly was speculation that her voice started to sound different. There were fans who speculated that she had undergone plastic surgery.
The change in Carrie's voice could be due to her perforated septum or the effects of cocaine on the vocal cords. I've discovered something else that casts doubt on whether she ever suffered from sleep apnea. It comes from her personal assistant, Abe Gurko, who worked for Carrie for 10 years, but claims she never exhibited any signs of the condition.
You know, sleep apnea, it's like, what is that? I've never seen anything like it. Sleep apnea, nothing.
Carrie also never mentioned this condition in any of her revealing books.
Given how tremendously open Carrie was about everything in her life, it is reasonable to think that if she knew she had sleep apnea, she probably would have spoken about it.
Given that her long-term PA didn't know about this condition, and the fact that Carrie never mentioned it in all of her books, leads me to discount sleep apnea as being responsible for her death. But passengers on Carrie's flight say she stopped breathing, so I'm not going to discount it completely. But I do need to look at exactly what happened on United Airlines Flight 935.
actress Carrie Fisher died after falling into a coma on a transatlantic flight.
Passengers say the actress appeared to stop breathing and was taken off the plane by EMTs after suffering full cardiac arrest.
World-renowned forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter is investigating Carrie Fisher's death.
So far, I've discovered that Carrie Fisher battled with bipolar disorder and had a history of drug addiction. But following her trip to England, she seemed to be in good health. Now, I want to examine exactly what happened on Carrie Fisher's final flight so I can reveal the true cause of her death.
December 23rd, 2016, 9 a.m., Heathrow Airport, London. Carrie Fisher boards United Airlines Flight 935 for Los Angeles with her assistant, Corby McCoyne. The plane takes off at the scheduled time, and Carrie is soon asleep. She continues to sleep for the entire journey.
I find the fact that Carrie Fisher slept for the whole of the 11-hour flight during daytime highly unusual. I would expect her to make at least one restroom visit during this period.
Once again, we do request that you please return to your seats and make sure that your seatbelts are securely fastened. Thank you.
15 minutes from landing, Carrie's assistant, Corby McCoyne, attempts to wake her.
Carrie?
But when she tries, Carrie vomits and is unresponsive.
Oh, my God. Help, we need some help here.
What's going on?
Hey,
I'm going to go for help. Be right back with me.
Corby, call me. Explain to me what had happened. Everyone was hysterical. It was nuts. Corby was in total pieces.
A doctor and nurse come forward and check for a pulse. None can be detected.
Do you mind if you need anything? No?
But if you tell us what happened.
Passengers on the flight say it looked like Carrie had experienced a heart attack or a cardiac arrest. A heart attack occurs when the blood flow to the heart is blocked, whereas a cardiac arrest occurs when the electrical rhythm of the heart is disrupted. One is a circulatory problem, the other is electrical.
They begin to administer cardiopulmonary resuscitation, otherwise known as CPR. The medics then use a defibrillator to try and shock Carrie's heart back into action. But the equipment recommends no shock should be given.
For the defibrillator to register no shock, it suggests Carrie is in a systole, which is the most serious form of cardiac arrest. It means there is a total cessation of electrical activity in the heart. So the medics must revert to CPR to try and restart it.
The captain radios ahead to the airport and requests an urgent landing slot.
935 heavy. I need the nature of the medical emergency.
We have unresponsive passengers. They're working on it right now. We should hopefully be on the deck by about 5.
12:20 p.m. local time. United Airlines Flight 935 touches down at LAX. At 12:31, paramedics arrive, and on finding Carrie still unresponsive, administer a stimulant.
I can see from her medical records that Carrie was injected with epinephrine, which is a type of adrenaline to kickstart the heart.
At 12:42, the paramedics succeed in restarting Carrie's heart, and she's rushed to the hospital. At the same time, her personal chef is driving to meet her at the airport.
About time I got halfway to the airport, got a phone call, and they said they couldn't wake Carrie up. She was being rushed to UCLA Medical.
December 23rd, 2016, 1:17 p.m., UCLA Medical Center, 4 days before Carrie Fisher's death. After being admitted into the intensive care unit, Carrie is put on life support.
They connected her to a machine and, you know, they had got a pulse. I held her hand and it just was, it just didn't feel like this was, you know, that this was it. Stayed there that night.
As Carrie battles for her life, her mother, Debbie Reynolds, and her daughter, Billy, arrive. Debbie attempts to raise everyone's spirits.
Later on that night, Debbie had a little talk with everyone. And she just wanted everyone to be happy and no crying. We have a lot of stuff ahead. We want to make this a great occasion, and we're going to celebrate our life. Anyone that was crying or that was weak, they were ordered to leave.
Christmas Day, 2016, 2 days before Carrie Fisher dies. After 2 days on life support, Carrie's vital signs begin to improve, and there's hope she may actually recover.
After a couple of days, they were going to slowly take her off the machine. She's such a strong person, she would always come back in any type of situation.
And we thought, you know, she's going to survive this.
December 27th, 2016, UCLA Medical Center, the day of Carrie's death. Despite the earlier positive signs, after 4 days, Carrie finally loses her battle.
Didn't think it was over, but, you know, reality sunk in. That was it.
At 8:55 a.m., Carrie Fisher dies with her daughter Billy at her side.
She was a force all her own. Actress and writer Carrie Fisher, who rose to fame as Princess Leia in one of the biggest blockbuster series of all time, Star Wars, has died at age 60.
I heard that Carrie had died. It shocked me. It threw me for a loop.
I was so shocked. It was the worst experience of my life.
It is generally thought that Carrie Fisher died from a heart attack, but I don't believe this was the case. After examining all of the medical evidence, I think I have finally discovered what killed Carrie Fisher.
We have unresponsive passenger.
Carrie Fisher lost consciousness on a transatlantic flight and was rushed to the hospital. She was put on life support, but despite briefly showing positive signs, she died 4 days later. Now, world-renowned forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter has come up with an answer to the unspecified cause of Carrie Fisher's death.
People presume that Carrie Fisher died from a heart attack, but her medical report states sleep apnea and other undetermined factors as the cause. I've discounted sleep apnea, and from further analysis of the medical evidence, I think I now know what was responsible for Carrie Fisher's death. And I don't think a heart attack was the cause. Carrie Fisher's toxicology report shows the presence of numerous illegal and prescription drugs, but could not establish their significance with regards to the cause of death. But I've discovered something in Carrie's toxicology report that suggests illegal drugs may have played a more significant role than was first thought. The report shows the presence of 6-MAM and morphine in her vitreous fluid, obtained following her death 4 days after presenting to the hospital. 6-MAM, or 6-monoacetylmorphine, is a metabolite of heroin, and morphine, the active component of the drug, both detected in the fluid of Carrie's eye. 6-MAM typically breaks down quickly, so its presence suggests Carrie had used heroin sometime before or during the flight. The fact that Carrie spent the entire flight during daylight hours without moving also suggests to me she was intoxicated. For these reasons, I believe the trigger for Carrie Fisher's death was drugs, especially heroin, and this is how I think it occurred. It's likely that Carrie Fisher used heroin shortly before she boarded or early in her flight.
I'm sure that Carrie, in order to be comfortable, took whatever she felt she needed for this long plane ride and everything coming. Who knows what was in her body?
Carrie soon fell asleep and didn't move throughout the flight. It was only when her assistant tried to wake her and she appeared to vomit that people realized something was wrong. I believe Carrie had been starved of oxygen long before she vomited, and that this is the sequence of events that caused her to lapse into a coma.
Carrie, help! I need some help here!
As Carrie slept, the heroin and other opiates she had taken sedated her and suppressed her breathing. When her assistant attempted to wake her, she vomited, leading to the aspiration of gastric material within the airways. This caused worsening anoxia or oxygen starvation, which in turn caused brain damage, which interrupted the electrical signals being sent to the heart, causing cardiac arrest. By the time the paramedics arrived, Carrie was showing no signs of consciousness. They administered a stimulant and CPR and restarted her heart. But the long period of time when her brain received no oxygen would prove to be fatal. The brain damage, coupled with an already weakened heart, caused another cardiac arrest after 4 days in the hospital. I believe it was damage to Carrie's brain that ultimately led to her death, and not a heart attack as was reported. The medical examiner says that drugs were a contributory factor, but I believe they played a more important role than had previously been thought. Ultimately, Carrie's health was damaged by the many years of self-medicating with drugs to treat her bipolar disorder. So it could also be argued that this condition was the indirect cause of Carrie Fisher's death.
Carrie Fisher did so much to help destigmatize mental illness. She made people feel like they weren't alone. And I think that's one of the greatest pieces of her legacy.
Carrie Fisher arranged to have her ashes placed in an urn shaped like a giant Prozac pill. It was a final act of defiance towards the condition that had dominated her life.
She's leaving behind the world in a better place. When you see how many different kind of people would come up to her and thank her for what she's done, you know, her job was done here.
Carrie was one of a kind. I've never met no one like her. And as long as I've been in this world, never anybody could be her friend. She would love you just like she'd known you for years. That's the way she is.
24 hours after Carrie's death, her mother Debbie Reynolds passed away after suffering a stroke. Many believed she had died of a broken heart.
It's like she pulled the plug emotionally and said, I'm going to meet my daughter. I am so blessed to have Debbie Reynolds as my loving sister. So blessed to have known Carrie, my Princess Leia. And aren't we all blessed to have her on film so that we can visit again and again and again?
So it's very hard for me to be sort of, I don't even know those words for those things where you're sort of moderate. There's a word that you wouldn't use. Oh, she's moderate. I either do it to death or not at all.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Autopsy. Don't forget to subscribe at podcastone.com with the Podcast One app or at Apple Podcasts. Then go to Reels.com. That's R-E-E-L-Z.com for clips, extras, and more from the TV version of the series, including reenactments and autopsy photos you'll only see on Reels channel. Find Reels on your TV at Reels.com. I'm Dr. Michael Hunter.